I am speaking with Jenny Brown, who has been gracious enough to give her time to speak with us today at KBOO. She is the author of Without Apology, The Abortion Struggle Now, the national organizer of NWL, National Women's Liberation, and was involved in the campaign to make Plan B, also known as the morning after pill, for over-the-counter without it being a prescription and without age restrictions. Jenny Brown, thanks for speaking with us today.
Great to be here.
So, Jenny, we are here today to talk about the upcoming case that will be heard at the U.S. Supreme Court. On May 17th, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to hear an abortion case from Mississippi, and it would have even more restrictions than the state currently has. Can you talk about what this case involves and what the current laws are in Mississippi regarding abortion?
Mississippi has a great number of laws against abortion, but many of them have been stopped by federal courts on the basis that they are inconsistent with the Supreme Court's decisions on abortion. So while there are a lot of restrictions, abortion is still legal on request in Mississippi. And there's one abortion clinic that provides abortions up to 16 weeks. Now, one of the laws that the Mississippi legislature passed in 2018 would restrict abortions after 15 weeks. So that's 15 weeks after your last menstrual period. And the reason that this case is really making abortion rights advocates nervous is that, first of all, this is the first abortion case to be considered by a Supreme Court, which is now, by everybody's estimates, 6-3 against abortion. So there's a large majority against abortion on the court now, thanks to Trump's appointments. The other reason that it makes us very nervous is that 15 weeks is clearly before what the courts have called viability, which basically is has been regarded, I think, unrealistically, but the courts have basically settled on 20 weeks as being the viability limit for abortion. So if the court allows this Mississippi law to stand, it will mean that there are a bunch of states who have passed laws, 6-week bans, what quote unquote heartbeat bills, which are basically essentially the same as a 6-week ban, which means that you would not be able to get an abortion. You can't get an abortion before you even know that you're pregnant. Right. So most people don't know they're pregnant until after 6 weeks. So it would open the door to the lower courts allowing some of these pre-viability abortion bans. And basically that would mean that throughout a good portion of the country, abortion would be, for all intents and purposes, illegal. So that's the situation right now. Now, I think it's interesting for us to note that the Supreme Court did not take up one of these bans at 6 weeks, or simply one of the rules that would just make abortion illegal. So clearly they are stepping a little carefully. I think that they are rather nervous about actually completely allowing states to ban abortion. That is they probably are continuing along what they consider to be a little bit safer route of gradually restricting abortion more and more and making it harder and harder for people to get abortions. So so that's really what I think our role as advocates for abortion rights is to really continue to question the court's legitimacy to be deciding whether or not we have the right to control our bodies. And why is this, you know, appointed lifetime appointments, undemocratic body, even having any say over this, rather than what I think often people in the abortion rights movement do, which is appeal to the constitutionality of abortion, and you know it's our right, it's in the law. Well, what happens when the court says it's not in the law and it's not your right and it's not constitutional? So right. I think we need to appeal to the our bodily autonomy and freedom, as opposed to sort of a legalistic framework where we talk about constitutional rights and whatnot.
And I want to get more into that, but just real quick, something you said is something that, going back to something you said about this happened gradually, I read that in an NPR article, a bunch of activists were interviewed and saying very similarly to what you said, is that the Supreme Court, while there is obviously a conservative majority, that they likely will gradually, as they see cases, make it even harder versus this case coming up with Mississippi be the ultimate case that will reverse Roe v. Wade, meaning that this one will lay the foundation, and then the case to follow that will be the one that would then overturn Roe. Does that sound accurate to you, that this is, we're heading down the last few steps for the many folks' minds, the dangerous possibility of Roe being overturned?
I think that's what the court would like to do. Whether or not they'll be allowed to do it by the people is, you know, is a different matter. But I do think that that's what the court is setting it up for. And what they're, with this questioning of the viability standard, I think what they're really trying to do is make it possible for some of these lower courts, which have anti-abortion judges on them and would like to approve some of these abortion bans, make it possible for them to have the wiggle room to do so. And then you would have sort of a flood of splits in the various lower courts, and that would allow the Supreme Court to step back in and try to resolve those, the issues created by those. So I think that's sort of the legal framework, but I think sometimes the movement spends too much time thinking about the legal framework and not enough about sort of the question of power and who wields it and how we can influence the court. The court obviously, you know, we're taught in our history books that the court gave us Roe, did no such thing. It was forced into it. It forced into a compromise by a very strong movement to get rid of all abortion laws. So Roe was a compromise with what the women's liberation movement demanded. And we can, again, if we mobilize, make it so uncomfortable for the court that they are not able to achieve what they want to achieve. And I should note that the Biden administration has set up a commission to study the possibility of putting term limits on justices and also increasing the size of the court, which creates a little bit of pressure there on the court to think about, okay, well, if we overstep and do too many undemocratic things, we may actually lose our lifetime appointments. So I think it's, you know, that's one area that's very, very interesting.
That's very interesting, and I've heard about that even before Biden becoming elected, about that being a possibility, and obviously his campaign at first dodging that question. So that'll be interesting. I think that's an important point of view or insight, rather, that could put pressure on more conservative and very conservative-leaning U.S. Supreme Court justices. And in my own conversations with folks who are in favor of reproductive health access, including abortion, there is at times an overwhelming sense of defeat, that there's really nothing, that it's all up to those in power, meaning politicians, judges, and so forth, legislatures. What do you say to folks? What can, even if they're not in Mississippi or in states where they're have heavily restrictive abortion laws, what can folks do to get involved?
Well, first of all, to know that we do have an influence, and the history of abortion rights, whether it's in Argentina this past January when they actually got legal abortion for the first time, or Ireland, which recently got abortion, that those victories and the victories that we have had in the U.S. around abortion rights, those were all driven by the movement on the ground. And one of the most important things that we that we can take from the history is that it was speaking out about our own abortions and legitimizing abortion, making it normal in people's understandings, so that they didn't think, I'm the only person who's this has happened to. The isolation before it was legal was just terrible. People thought that they had you know, that they were the only one, essentially. And so what happened in the women's liberation movement is women started talking to each other about their abortions. And at that time, of course, they were underground illegal ones for the most part. There were very few legal abortions. And suddenly a light bulb went off. Wait, this isn't my personal problem. This is a political problem, and we can solve it by fighting to change the law and get all abortion laws repealed, and abortion in their minds would not have any more restrictions on it than, say, heart surgery or an appendectomy or any kind of other medical procedure. So tonsillectomy maybe would be a better example, because abortion is an extremely easy procedure. It's not, it takes about 5 minutes, and it's not at all dangerous. So that was the history that we can look back at is one of mobilizing around our own needs and understanding of our rights and what could get us freedom. And it wasn't sort of focused on, you know, the original abortion rights movement sort of bumped along in the post-war period talking about, you know, we should make it legal if you were raped or in cases of incest or fetal deformity or if you've already had 4 children or, you know, basically exceptions to the law. What the women's liberation movement did is said, no, this is an absolute right. We need it to be taken completely out of the law. And in some states, we've actually been successful in getting it basically taken out of the law. It was removed from the criminal code in New York a few years ago. I believe it's also true that Oregon does not have anything in the criminal code about abortion. Several states have taken their old pre-Roe laws and just gotten rid of them. So
when you say criminal code, sorry to interrupt you, when you say criminal code, do you mean folks who self-induce an abortion or those who are physicians and perform the procedure?
Well, in New York in 1970, which was the original law that Roe was modeled under, the way that it was made legal in New York was to make an exception to the criminal code. Abortion was illegal unless it was done by a doctor in a medical facility before 24 weeks. So it stayed illegal in the criminal code all of this time up until 2018, I believe, when it was actually finally removed from the criminal code. So that's been true for a lot of states still have it in the criminal code. It's just been invalidated by the Supreme Court decisions.
And just to make this really crystal clear, because it was the point of confusion for myself and my research, just having to kind of read between the lines and these very, legal language, does that mean, with it being on the books, whether or not it was enforced, that a woman or person who was pregnant could be charged if they induced an abortion themselves? Is that what that meant?
That is what it meant, and that's been rarely used. Usually other laws are used against people who self-induce, but occasionally that law has been used against them, yeah, in various states.
Okay, and then I'd like to go back specifically to Mississippi. Can you talk about what is the current law regarding abortion, and then if the Supreme Court hears this case and is in favor of what Mississippi is pushing forward after 15 weeks, banning most abortions, what would that mean for Mississippi? And then we'll get back to the broader scale of all states. So the current law, and then what would happen if this were passed?
So the current law is that you can't get an abortion more than 20 weeks after your last menstrual period, or unless your life is in danger or your health is severely compromised, or the fetus is going to die anyway. So that's a 20-week ban. There are a bunch of things you have to do. You have to undergo an ultrasound. You have to have a waiting period. If you're a minor, you have to get parental consent or go to a court. And there's a script that the doctors read to you telling you that abortion is various things that are inaccurate about abortion that was written by the legislature. So there are a lot of things that you have to go through, and then also the clinic itself. There's one clinic in Jackson, the Jackson Women's Health Organization, has a lot of burdensome standards placed on it. So, which is one of the reasons there's only one clinic right now in Mississippi.
And it also has non-Mississippi doctors. It has to have all their. I believe they have 5 doctors that rotate, and all 5 of them are from out of state. From what I've read.
Yeah, and that's quite common in the South for clinics, because there's just not enough work for a doctor to just be full-time. So often,
right.
Often
so that's not specific to abortion. Okay.
Yeah, often okay. Doctors will travel around, but it is true that they make it so difficult to practice in Mississippi that it's very difficult for doctors to do so, and they really have to be dedicated to the task at hand of giving people their bodily autonomy back, right? I mean, they
right.
have to be dedicated to that. So, and of course, there have been several assassinations of doctors, in particular in the South. So, so that's another reason why it's difficult to find doctors who are dedicated enough to risk their lives and their, you know, have their families, be willing for them to do that. So these are all factors that make it harder and harder, and are deliberately used to make it harder and harder. Now, even the 20-week ban, and this has been a strategy for, throughout the anti-abortion rules that have been put in place by state legislatures, the strategy is to make it so hard to get an abortion in time that you end up not being able to get one. So after 12 weeks, the price would go up, and then after, you know, and then you have this 20-week ban. So what happens often is somebody is trying to raise enough money to get the abortion. It's an average of $530, and then you have to get to the clinic, and because of the 24-hour waiting period, you have to go, you have to get counseled, and then you have to go back and get the abortion, right? All of these things, getting childcare, most people getting abortions already have kids, getting time off work, all of the costs of travel, all of this just is very difficult for people to put together. So so often they will get to the point where they are able to pay for the first trimester abortion, but they've already tipped over into the second trimester, and then that's more expensive. And then then when they're trying to raise that money, they end up bumping up against this 20-week limit. And then it becomes illegal in Mississippi for them to get an abortion. They would have to go to another state to get it. And often that's just impossible to do. So,
and when you add the component of the pandemic as well, that compounds all of the things that you just said.
Exactly. And so the goal with these limits is, first of all, the right to life is, as they call themselves, the anti-abortion forces, want to put the focus onto the fetus and take it off of the person who's pregnant, whose life is really the one that's being decided about here, right?
Right.
And then they also, you know, they want to push people more and more into not being able to get the abortions that they want. And one and the there are, while there's one abortion clinic in Mississippi, there are, by last count, some 37 crisis pregnancy centers. And some of these crisis pregnancy centers, which are fake clinics run by anti-abortion people, and they're not medical facilities, they claim to be abortion clinics, and they'll even schedule people for their abortions, and then they'll reschedule them and reschedule them and reschedule them, hoping to push them over the time limit. So all of these things sort of work together to deprive people of their rights. That's sort of the game with the time limits, and that's why we're seeing this. Now, I should note that in Canada, there is no time limit, but also, abortion is covered under the national health system, so you don't have to spend a bunch of time coming up with the money. You can just get your abortion when you want to. And most, like a third of people who are getting late abortions, one of the Planned Parenthood did a study, the reason that they're getting them later than they wanted to get them is because they couldn't come up with the money initially. So all of these factors are, you know, a lot of it is around using the price to make it impossible to get the health care that you need.
And then opening that back up, you mentioned trigger laws. And for folks who don't know what that means, at least 11 states, to my understanding, if Roe were overturned, would automatically, once the U.S. Supreme Court made a decision, automatically abortion would be illegal in 11 states, including Mississippi. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And at least, I believe, 24 states would, at some point after that decision, would make abortion illegal.
Yeah, the legislatures in, I believe it may be up to 17 states now that have some form of trigger law or six-week ban or heartbeat bill that basically bans abortion. So we're talking about a significant number of states. Yeah, so the problem there is that the legislatures have been unable to get their abortion bans by the court, so they've been stayed. But what they've done is they've passed laws saying, well, if the Supreme Court allows states to ban abortion again, we are going to automatically ban it. But it's somewhat unlikely that the court, at least in this term, is going to do that. Probably what they're going to do, and this is evidenced by their picking up this 15-week ban rather than one of the 6-week bans. Probably they're going to, you know, take this somewhat more long-range strategy, which will eat away at the right some more and allow lower courts to approve some of these bans. So that's kind of where they're going with it.
So just to clarify, what you're saying is it's pretty likely that it will be approved that in most cases, you know, except for emergencies, after 15 weeks, a person in Mississippi could not receive abortion. But that wouldn't necessarily overturn Roe, which obviously makes abortion within the first, I believe, 6 months federally legal. So what you're saying is it'll be chipping away, but it won't be the final thing that overturns Roe.
Yes, but the problem is that there's a stand that, you know, in the various Supreme Court cases, including Roe and Casey, there's this standard of viability, which the courts have been understanding to be 20 weeks. So even anti-abortion judges have said, well, this, we'd love to approve this law, but the Supreme Court says that you can't ban abortion before 20 weeks. And if that standard is removed or they make it sort of something that could be interpreted rather than something that's a hard and fast rule, that will give an opportunity to these lower courts, which are itching to do it, to say, okay, yeah, this 15-week ban is okay. Oh, this 10-week ban, yeah, that's all right. You know, as long as you can give some reasons why you want to do that. And so it will the fear is that it will open the floodgates to further chipping away our rights. That's the worry.
This is Claire Rosciato with KBOO News in Depth.